direct from the web, it's Billy Masters Live. And now, please welcome your host, Billy Masters.
Hey, everybody. Oh, my God. Hold on. There's still a smattering of applause out there. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Billy Masters. Boy, I look gorgeous. God, this special lighting, it takes 20 years off you. Thank God. It only makes me look 15 instead of 35. Anyway, welcome to the show, everyone. I am, of course, Billy Masters. And today, thank you, Monica. Today is Thursday, November 11th, 2021. You know, I always feel silly saying Happy Veterans Day, like it's Memorial Day, like Happy Memorial Day. You know, it's not necessarily a happy day, but it is a day that we... Oh, you know, as a gay man, I always feel silly also saying thank you for your service. But it is something I often do to servicemen and civilians alike. Anyway, welcome to the show. This is a very special show for me because it is our 100th show, which is both good and bad. Because can I just tell you, when we started this show, I needed a drink for that. When we started this show, we thought that, you know, this pandemic was going to go on like, you know, a month, a couple weeks, maybe a couple months. And, you know, so many people have said to me that we are in a post-pandemic world. And I'm not convinced that that's actually true. I've been hearing about surges in Europe and extended COVID protocols in Los Angeles, which we will talk about with our first guest in a moment. So, you know, I don't feel that I'm post anything. You know, I'm in the Boston area right now. I've been traveling a lot lately. And I was so surprised. So in Boston, you still have to wear masks to go into grocery stores. You have to wear masks when you go to a restaurant. You can take it off when you're at your table. And of course, I had said to a friend, oh my God, you're still doing this? And they said, yeah, you just came from Florida. Anything goes in Florida. It's the Wild West or the Wild South. And Los Angeles, of course, they still are being very diligent, which I think is good. And I'm very concerned that the winter is going to be problematic with people being stuck inside. And trust me, I am in the Boston area. It has been getting down to 32 degrees Fahrenheit at night. And my phone will say, feels like 25. Well, it might as well feel like 0 degrees because I am not happy. So happily, I will be back in Los Angeles full time after the holidays, God willing. And, that's why, you know, I was thinking about who I wanted for my 100th show. And our constant contributor, Sue O'Connell, who has co-hosted with me, may pop in at some point. But she's very busy with National Public Radio and New England Cable News. You know, we had her constantly because she was just sitting home during the pandemic. That's the thing. For those of you watching, you know, there were a lot more people watching live when we started because people were just sitting at home. They had nothing else to do, and we were here to keep you entertained and keep you informed and give you a little bit of a break from the COVID drudgery. And people are back at work now. Interestingly enough, our numbers of views are still huge. I mean, we've got thousands of people watching every show from around, mostly around the US, but also internationally, and they're just watching it later. So for all of you watching, thank you for sticking with us. We will stick with you as long as you stick with us. You know, when those numbers go down, I'm out of here. I'm very much a person that if I'm not getting a return, I'm done. So our second most popular guest after Sue is John Duran. John Duran is a former West Hollywood mayor, city councilor. He's an attorney in Los Angeles. He's also an activist. One of the really, you know, when you think of West Hollywood, there are pillars. There are people who really all of West Hollywood rests on their shoulders. They were around for the starting of West Hollywood, keeping West Hollywood afloat and really shepherding it into what it is now, which is frankly, too popular, if you ask me. And so I always count on him to tell me what's going on in West Hollywood. So please welcome John Duran to the show. Hey, John.
Hi, Billy. Hi, babe. Good to see you.
Oh, it's good to see you. I can't wait till we can actually do this in person. I'll be there in the bad lighting, too. Wait, if I'm in your office, I'm going to bring good lighting. I'm just telling you right now.
You know, it's really, it's hard to tell, but like, look, that's all of Los Angeles. You see that?
I know,
that gorgeous?
I love it. It's so gorgeous. I've been in that office.
I'm up in my office tower, but we're getting all that light coming
in. I know your office. I've been on that desk. So, but, you know, I don't want to cause any trouble.
Yeah, no.
I'm curious, you know, what I just saw the, there was a press release last night from the governor, right. Governor Newsom, talking about that emergency protocols are still going to stay in place.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, you know, I was just in West Hollywood for the first time, I guess 3 weeks ago, and I was amazed to see, and I'm not seeing it most places, I'm actually seeing people in West Hollywood wearing masks outside still, which a lot of people don't, most people don't. And so I'm just curious, where is West Hollywood right now in terms of COVID?
You know, I think West Hollywood reflects our demographics very, very much so. So I was reading in, I think it was USA Today or one of the other national periodicals, the differences between the political parties in terms of vaccinations. 90% of Democrats are vaccinated, 40% of Republicans, right?
Yeah.
So in a place like West Hollywood or San Francisco or New York, that's very deep, deep, dark blue, you know, we're a reflection of that. And I think, you know, people pretty much got it early on. And I think it was our experiences around HIV and AIDS. We've been through pandemics. So we learned a lot of painful, horrible lessons in the 80s and 90s. And we were like, okay, let's get to it. So, I mean, right now we're at the top of a plateau. Like, you know, Southern California, Los Angeles, daily we maybe have, you know, 10 to 20 deaths every day. Still, you know, in a county of 10 million people. Daily, we have about 1,500 new infections. Daily, we have about 500 or 600 people in the hospitals, but it's not getting any lower. It's just plateaued. And so watching, like you just mentioned, what's happening in Europe, they're having an explosion again in Europe. And what we know about COVID is every 2 months, for some reason, every 2 months, there's another
surge. Yeah.
And so I keep telling people, winter is coming. I mean, we were kind of feeling this way after last summer. I don't know if you remember.
I do.
Last fall, everything kind of dipped low. We thought, oh, okay, we're up. Let's dust off. Let's get back.
Then we
up.
Had that huge spike.
Yeah, huge winter spike. Like the worst, December and January. Now, do I think it'll be that high again? No, because, you know, now there are millions of us vaccinated, doubly vaccinated, you know, and we've
triply,
got
triply on my end.
Good for you. I've got to get my booster. So I don't think it's
you know, I got my booster, just so people know, I got my booster because I was going to Europe, and my doctor said to me, and it was before that it was officially, like, there were CDC guidelines. It was just out there. So there were no restrictions. And my doctor said to me, I'm telling you to get it now. I was in Eastern Europe in countries where the vaccination rate is in the teens.
Wow.
Like 15%. Wow. And I joked to my parents that, you know how you could tell a tourist in Eastern Europe, we're the ones wearing masks, because nobody wore a mask. Everybody was just walking around as if COVID didn't even exist. So
you know,
it's really amazing.
Yeah. You know where they're wearing masks, though? Asia. Asia
has
a lot of experiences with viruses and contagion. And, you know, when COVID first hit, mask went on all over Asia. It's Europe and Western countries like the U.S. and Europe where we put up a fight. You know,
you and I know, because we travel a lot, that for decades we have seen, like, the little Asian women on planes with masks.
They always
have masks on planes. Yeah. And we're always, like, laughing. Meanwhile, who's laughing now? You know,
you and I are those little Asian women wearing masks on planes.
I'm okay with that. That's fine. I could get a job at Panda Express. I'm happy.
You know, one of the big pluses, though, I didn't get the flu last year. I always get the flu. right? We didn't have a flu season. There were hardly any flu infections.
Which is why they wear masks.
So.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm really disturbed because I have nieces and nephews and they are, you know, in their teens. And they're just starting and they are in, you know, we're in Massachusetts. So we're in a very liberal, very progressive environment where they were waiting for the opportunity to get vaccines, which I think is wonderful. But I know that there are cities, I was just in Florida, where there are kids that, you know, they're inculcated into not getting a vaccine. That's their family that tells them.
That's Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis should be charged criminally for what's happening in Florida. I mean, really, he's not taking this serious. Same with Greg Abbott in Texas. You know, California, still of the more popular states, is doing better than Texas, Florida, Pennsylvania, or even New York, right? I mean, California's really on it. We got 40 million people here. How he managed to do anything is beyond me. It's a surprise. But you know what? I'm really grateful for the vaccines because I feel a lot safer going out, you know, and that I'm likely to, like, hopefully most of us get through this pandemic, get through it. It's not over yet, though. Not over.
And that's the thing. I'm curious because I did not, while I was in West Hollywood, I did not go out. I mean, I went to dinners, but I didn't go out to any bars or clubs. How is the club scene in West Hollywood? Are people going out?
Yeah, it's packed. I mean, the few times I go, Billy, I'm an older dude now. I hate to tell you, by 10 o'clock, I'm usually in bed. I know that. I've asked you to go out. Before 10 o'clock, I'd just be heading out for the evening's carnage, right?
I know.
10 o'clock, I'm like done. But when I do go out to meet friends occasionally, you know, everything's packed. Everything's crowded.
Really?
I think for the most part, people feel, this may be overly confident, but feel like we're in a population of people where probably everybody's vaccinated, right? Because the mask wearing is kind of silly. You wear a mask to walk into Rocco's, and then the minute you sit at a table, you take it off. It's like, okay, how effective is that really?
Right. No. But how about the bars? Like, are people wearing them at bars, or do they take them off when they're at a bar?
They take them off. They take them off, especially if you're outside. If you're outside on a patio, you can take them off.
Well, that's all right. Although I think that's stupid. It's still, I understand it. And I will tell you that I've been to bars in Florida, of all places. And, you know, when you see everyone around you not wearing a mask, that it triggers in your mind that that's normal. Because that's what you see. So I don't actually even think about it, which I think, you know, I'm not quite sure if it's a mistake or not. I really worry about it.
Yeah. There was an article in the Los Angeles Times this morning that the hardest groups of people to get to comply are Black and Latino men for various reasons.
They also don't want to wear condoms, John.
Are the least vaccinated people in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the same sort of dynamics we saw during the AIDS epidemic with guys on the down low, right? I mean, there's also cultural influences in play. You know, with Black men, it's the whole Tuskegee experiments that happened way back around.
No, and I understand really that.
Mistrust around vaccines. I get that. You know, with Latino men, apparently the article is detailing how these guys, whether they're Black or Latino men, they kind of run in packs. Like if the leader of the pack gets a vaccine, they'll all get the vaccine. But if the leader of the pack,
I think that's what I said about families. Yeah.
Yeah. They won't do it. And it almost takes somebody in the pack to get sick or die before they go, oh, shit. Oh, sorry, Billy. I dropped the S word.
You could swear on this show. Okay. It's fine. You can also be nude. I mean, it's fine if you want to take something off. It's fine.
I may come summer. You have to have me back in the summertime.
I've had you in the summer. Trust me. You know, it's funny because I almost feel, you know, I think it was last year. Right before the pandemic, I think it was my 20th anniversary of doing the column at BillyMasters.com. I said, you know, for the next year, because I travel, I am going to sleep with a different man from a different state every week so that it's 50 states, 52 weeks. I got a little buffer. I would be dead right now with this pandemic, all those people. But I'm waiting for the COVID to be over so I can get back. I'm only up to the seas.
Yeah.
I'm only up to Colorado.
You know what's funny about this? The average heterosexual male has 7 sex partners in his entire
life. Oh, my God, I had 7 last week.
I know.
I know I'm a whore.
It's amazing to me when I read statistics like that. Well, no wonder they're so homophobic and grumpy all the time.
Right, well, I'm not even asking how many digits your number is. You're probably into 4 digits at this point.
Thank God. I think I stopped counting on my abacus. That's how many.
I ran out of beads. So what is going to happen, do you think, in West Hollywood in terms of like tourism? How has that affected the economy in West Hollywood? Are people coming?
Not as much. The hotels are not where they used to be. They're trying to bring gay pride back next June. So fingers crossed it's back, right? I think they're going to try to bring Halloween back, but we didn't have a carnival on Santa Monica.
Well, there's two years. No carnival.
Yeah, 2 years no carnival, 2 years no pride.
There was that March 2 years ago, I guess.
Yeah.
Kind of March.
I was there. It was, not the same.
Different.
And really, it was a march around Black Lives Matter. It wasn't even a pride.
Yeah, that's really what it was.
It was a Black Lives Matter protest. They tried to make it into pride. It's like, no, these are separate issues.
Yeah, that was when pride tried to piggyback them, right? I remember.
Yeah, that was a terrible.
Well, that was also the nail in the coffin of Christopher Street West. I hate to get in the weeds with people. Who will bring back gay pride, John?
Well, you know, Christopher Street West, you're right. That was the beginning. I was still on the council. That was the beginning of the end right there. You know, John D'Amico and I, when they piggybacked on Black Lives Matter, we're like, you guys just, there's like a serious disconnect going on.
Yeah, you're missing it.
So we put out, we wanted a request for proposals from other people. And then that's when Christopher Street West said, we're packing up our purse and we're leaving.
We're going to go downtown or something.
Yeah, we'll show you. And then COVID hit. So COVID hit, ironically. So I was like, okay, nobody's doing anything. So I think West Hollywood at the end of the day is going to have its own parade, its own carnival.
Good.
You know, we're just going to do our own thing.
Right. Run in house.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've always had it on Santa Monica Boulevard. It should be on Santa Monica Boulevard. And I'm sorry, you put, 300,000 LGBT people in downtown LA, not that they would go, but even if they went, it's not the same welcoming environment as Santa Monica Boulevard and San Vicente, you know? And for people to get there on subways, I just think it's ripe for problems. Can't do it in the Valley. You can't do it in, Santa Monica.
Well, doesn't Valley have their own pride?
They do. The Valley has its own pride. Long Beach has its own pride. Right. Orange County has its own pride. In terms of, it would have to be either Hollywood or West Hollywood, I think, to have enough geography to pull it off. I hope West Hollywood continues to be, with or without Christopher Street West, it continues to be the heart of pride every June. So
I asked you, I mentioned at the beginning of the show that you've been around since the beginning. Wasn't the first pride on Hollywood Boulevard, or am I wrong about that?
No, you are correct. And actually it was a parade. Yeah. Stonewall happened June of 1969. 1 year later, June of 1970, Reverend Troy Perry, Morris Kite and others put together the first parade on Hollywood Boulevard. But it wasn't well received. The LAPD wanted wanted huge insurance. They weren't happy. People were marching with paper bags over their faces so they couldn't be identified. It was not particularly safe. And then it came to West Hollywood the following year, and it's been there ever since,
Okay, so it's been after Hollywood Boulevard, was it immediately to Santa Monica Boulevard?
Yeah, immediately, when this was unincorporated county, before there was even a city here. It was just county. Yeah. And you know what? For 100 years, West Hollywood's kind of been, no man's land. Gardens of Allah in the 1920s, the Rat Pack in the 40s, James Dean and Marilyn Monroe in the 50s. So we've always been the home for anything outlandish. And that's why it's so well in West Hollywood. Yeah.
I'm just curious because I haven't talked to you. So, I can get a little personal. What are you working on now? You're still obviously a private attorney.
I'm working on
that always. I know every inch of that body. So, but I mean, you are still a private attorney on your own. You're working with clients.
I am. And I've got my criminal practice. I got everything going on right now from DUI to murder. So I've still got a very, busy criminal practice. Yeah.
Do you miss being government?
No. Don't tell anybody except your 10,000 viewers. But it's such a relief to not be part of West Hollywood Council. You know, I did it for 20 years. That is a long time to be.
I was part of your first campaign.
You were way back
at the Athletic Club. Do you remember?
Oh my God! Yeah, that's where we did our campaign, at the old Athletic Club on Santa Monica Boulevard.
Oh,
yeah, I did it for 20 years, and when John Heilman and I lost our seats, you know, John Heilman had been there 35 years. I've been there.
He was from the very.
We were replaced by two young people. We kind of went, oh shit, we lost. We never lose, but we lost. And you know, it wasn't just West Hollywood; all cities over the West Side. But being out of it. Oh my God, I have my privacy back. I have my life back. You know, I had, you know, crazy, some of the local blogs and rags are running around trying to take pictures of me at the movies and who I was hanging with.
Oh, and there were horrible stories. And you were, again, when you're a public official, you are ripe for picking.
Well, yeah, and John Duran hanging out with known porn stars. It's like, my partner's a porn star, former porn star. Billy Masters married him, actually.
Performed the ceremony. John, I see my next guests are backstage, but I just want to end. So right now, in terms of COVID and the West Coast, is it varying from city to city, or is it pretty much sort of stabilized?
It's not city to city. It's blue versus red. In the blue areas of the West Coast, we're doing fine. We're doing great. In the red areas, rural California, you know,
Inland Empire,
they're not doing good. And their hospitals are filling up. It's become a red-blue thing rather than a city-by-city thing.
Well, I really hope that people will work together. I mean, one of the things that I love about California, about being a resident of California all these years, is there is a sense of community in our communities. And hopefully we can, especially, you know, I think about that on Veterans Day, that this is a day that we're honoring people who fought not for the Republicans, not for the Democrats, but for the country. And if we could get back to that, I think that would help everybody.
Oh, man, I hope we can get back to there. It doesn't seem possible, but, you know, I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic like you. So I just want to say congratulations on your 100th show.
Oh, God,
I think I've been here since the very first show.
You were on the second or third show.
I'm happy to have been part of it. And I thank you for inviting me, as always.
Sweetie, thank you, John Duran. I'll talk to you soon.
See you when you come back home. Bye-bye.
Yes, definitely. Bye-bye. Okay. When I was putting this show together, I really thought to myself, who do I want on this show? And there were some people, so I keep a list of everybody who I invite on the show. And most people are really good about getting back to me. Some of them are not. I'm not going to point any fingers. But I went and I said, who did I try to get over the past few months? And it didn't work out for a variety of reasons. And this is like one of those twofers. You get one, you get two. I love that. So Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr. were a part of a documentary I saw this summer called Summer of Soul, which was documenting something I knew absolutely nothing about, which was the Black Woodstock. It took place in Harlem, I think 1969, if I'm not mistaken, they'll tell me. And I said, oh my God, I love Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr. And I just have to say, as you know, when I was a young gay boy in high school, Solid Gold every Saturday night was like what I live for. But, you know, Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr. are not just Solid Gold. They're not just Summer of Soul. They've been entertaining audiences since the 60s as members of the Fifth Dimension, as a duo group, as solo artists. They're not only the voice of their generation, they're the voice of many generations, of all generations. And I am thrilled to have them on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr. Hey, guys.
Hi, Billy.
Thank you for such a lovely introduction. That's great.
Oh, please. I love you guys so much. And I was telling Jim and, you know, Jason before we even started, the last time I saw you guys was at an event and I was with Jennifer Lewis and it was a benefit for something. And you know, when you guys come in, you radiate this light and this warmth and this smile and this energy that I think the world needs right now, frankly.
Well, thank you.
Thanks,
That's
Billy.
So sweet.
How much is that going to cost us?
It's going to cost you nothing because I don't need anything because I've got, hold on, where is it? I've got it here somewhere. I've already got a copy of your album, Blackbird.
Wonderful.
That's cool.
And this collection of Lennon McCartney songs, is this your first album in, is it possible, 30 years?
Yes.
Yes.
You're right.
That's
you're
right. That's right. And we're just so excited about it because we thought, well, I guess that was it, you know, for our.
Well, let's say it like this. It's our first studio
yes
album in right. 30 years. I mean, we put out some music, but we didn't have it this elaborate,
oh,
you know, like you really want to do it, you know.
On EE1.
Yeah, EE1 and BMG behind us and all.
Yeah, I mean, we've got the big guns behind
us. Yeah, it makes a big difference.
Well, again, I have to say Jason, of course, who I adore, was so good with Elizabeth Taylor and, of course, brings in Kathy Ireland as well. And BMG, who don't they own your back catalog?
If they do, there's something I don't know.
Yeah,
you might know.
I don't know about that, but
well, you have such a huge back catalog, so.
But we have a great relationship, and they're just so supportive and excited about the project, and we're so thankful and amazed that so much is going on at this stage in our lives.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I thought about it that you two, your careers are so intertwined. Even though you've both done things on your own, you really are, you weave in and out of each other's lives, personally and professionally, as did Lennon and McCartney.
Right.
Uh huh.
Well, go ahead, Marilyn.
Go on. No, I was just going to say that when we started out, of course, we were members of the Fifth Dimension together, and we loved working together, and we liked it so much, we got married. So we've been married 15 years now. And then we started thinking about doing some individual things just to see, because both of us had wanted to sing individually since before we knew each other, Billy growing up in St. Louis and me growing up here in Los Angeles. And then we started talking about seeing where we could go with our solo careers. And
done everything.
We've done it all.
Yeah.
And you know what? We love it most being together.
You know, but can I just say, Marilyn, I was preparing for this and I started looking at the Solid Gold clips. You sank everything every week somebody would be on singing their latest hit, and then you'd walk on and say, well, let's do a duet, and this is not like lip syncing, this was live entertainment every week.
Yeah,
right.
And sang everything. I mean, it was staggering. They'd say, oh, right on the charts is Footloose, and we now have Marilyn McCoo singing it.
And people would say, you got to be kidding. Yeah.
No, but I want to go back to the beginning because there's a great story, Marilyn, I'm hoping you'll tell it, of you meeting Lamont and how you ended up kind of sort of brought you to Billy as well.
Well, you know, Lamont was a photographer and continued to be a photographer.
Becklemore, who is a member of the Fifth Dimensions eventually.
Becklemore with the Fifth Dimension. And I was participating in a Miss Bronze California pageant here in Los Angeles. And that's how I met Lamont. And then he started talking about how he was singing with a group and they would get together and that was just a hobby. And so he asked me, would I like to be involved? And I was in college at the time. And so I wasn't doing as much singing as I wanted to. And I said, sure, a group that's singing together. So they used to get together at Lamont's photography studio. And then Billy ended up coming out to Los Angeles looking for a record deal for himself. And Lamont, knowing all the people, you okay?
Hold on, Billy may need some water.
Okay, water is on the way.
See, it's all right. I got mine too. Okay.
I think I was getting ready to say something wrong. When I get ready to say something wrong, Billy starts coughing, so I have to shut up.
There you go. That's the signal.
Oh, Billy, can we just congratulate you on your 100th podcast?
Oh my God! Thank you, Marilyn.
I mean, that's so exciting.
You know, it started because COVID had begun and people were sitting home with nothing to do. And I said, well, I have lots of friends. I have lots of questions. And if I can just keep people entertained for like an hour a day, just so that they don't have to be hearing the news constantly. I mean, this, how has COVID been for the two of you?
Well, we were working in Florida. And we had a month-long schedule of performances. And this was back in March of 2020. Yeah. I think everybody has a 2020 story to tell. Yeah. So we're performing and we're hearing about this COVID thing going on, and they're starting to get concerned about what's going to happen on Broadway. And long story short, Broadway shut down, and so did everything else. And we came home from Florida. we had done three performances, and then that was the end of that. We all came home, and for the next over a year, we kind of sat out and said, now what?
Right. Yeah, we didn't know how long it would last.
No.
When we heard that Broadway was shutting down, we knew our time wasn't long after that. Yeah. Everything was shutting down.
Is home still California for you two?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We're still right here in Los Angeles. Where are you?
Normally in Los Angeles with you, usually in West Hollywood, but I'm in Boston because I thought my parents are here, 80 and 88. Oh, and I said, just in case they need me or I need them, let's just quarantine together.
Okay.
Right. Which is good. That's good. A lot of people don't even think of that.
So Marilyn, we talked about where you started. Billy, now how did you make it out to California?
Well, like Marilyn was saying, I was looking for a recording contract, a record deal, and I found out that Lamont knew the head of Motown on the West Coast. I didn't want to go through Detroit because Detroit had a line. And the end of the line was in St. Louis. So I would go to California. But Lamont knew everybody at Motown because he was taking pictures. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, I said, do you know somebody over there where I can do an audition? He said, yes. And by the way, Lamont and Ronald, who were part of the Fifth Dimension, we're all from St. Louis.
All the guys.
I didn't know all that.
We were born and raised in St. Louis. And so was Jennifer Lewis.
Yes, she was.
But anyway,
what a character she is. She is.
I love her. But she decided. I mean, I decided to come out to Los Angeles looking for a deal, and you know, I ran into Lamont and I did my audition, and then they put me on the waiting list anyway. I was introduced to Marilyn and some of the people that she had been singing with before I got out here.
And then Florence.
Marilyn, were you? I was just going to say, was Florence friends with you beforehand?
No, actually, Florence was from Philadelphia, but she was living.
Oh, wow!
And I actually met her through Lamont, and we all started talking about forming this group as a hobby. Florence wanted to sing, and she was in the Miss Bronze California pageant after I was. I won the Grand Talent Award 1 year, and then Florence came along and won the Grand Talent Award the next year. And then after that, we ended up putting this group together just for fun. And
look what happened.
And the rest, as they say, is history.
And so what I love is that when you guys left to be solo artists, the group continued. Everybody seemed to be on great terms. You guys have reunited with them several times over the years. And Florence still leads the group now, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, she's carrying on the group and they're doing a beautiful job out there. They're still working, you know, and every time we get a chance, we try to see them, you know.
Oh, I bet.
Yes, and we talk to Florence, not on a regular basis, but every once in a while, we're talking Ross and Lamont.
Now, I loved the Fifth Dimension. One of the things I loved about the group was that your look. You had a really distinctive look. And it was the dance. You guys really used your bodies so well. Where did that idea come from?
Well, it was just, you know, when you're on stage and you're singing and the music is moving and it's hot and you move. You move your body.
Yeah.
And so, you didn't bring in a professional choreographer or anything?
Not in the beginning.
Not in the beginning, yeah. But later on we did, when they found out that most of us could dance, that, you know, everybody can't dance.
But yes.
But we can move, you know. Mm-hmm. But with Florence and Marilyn being able to really dance, you know.
Mm. And Florence was such a hot dancer, and she was, I was always trying to compete with her. What is she doing now? Can I do that?
And can I say you were a good-looking group?
Oh, thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
We were very excited about what happened, how the group just took off, and the music that we did was different from what other groups were doing, and it became a very exciting experience.
You know, the thing that was so distinctive about you guys, again, when you have that many people, you had really intricate harmonies. Who was the person? Because, you know, you said not everyone can dance. Not every singer can harmonize.
Well, that's true, too.
This is true, too. Right.
So I'm just curious, who came up with that sound? That was the Fifth Dimension sound. You always knew one of your songs.
Well, I think it was the arrangement of the voices that really kind of helped make the sound. But who came up with the beautiful arrangements?
Yeah,
was a arranger by the name of Bob Alcibor.
Oh,
he was a genius just in arranging music. I mean, he arranged music not only for the Fifth Dimension but for a lot of other acts, and. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can't give him enough credit for the things that he's done.
Well, one of the most distinctive things of any group is if you hear them on the radio and you know who it is, and you had that. I want to go to Summer of Soul, because did you know when you did the concerts? It was 69, right?
Yes,
that's right.
Yeah, you were right.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Never make sure. I always double check. When you did it, did you know? Well, you must have known it was being filmed, because I've seen footage of the cameras there. But did you know ever what happened to that film?
Well, we I knew it was being filmed, but I didn't know for what. We didn't know for what and for when. And if it was going to ever be shown or what, you know.
We thought it was being shot for posterity.
Yeah,
you know,
the
mayor of New York at the time, he was supporting
the
project.
Right,
and
right.
So we thought, you know, that they might be shooting it so that they could have it to show what they were doing for
the
city.
Archives and stuff like that. Yeah.
So we had no idea that that Summer of Soul was going to end up happening 50 years later.
No.
Over the years, did you ever wonder, whatever happened to that footage, or just everyone forgot?
No. Well,
I think most of us just forgot, you know, because I mean, we were on with our careers and our lives and doing shows and working. And then when Questlove called us about it, it was like, oh, that's right. We did do that back in 1969.
And it was so interesting when they called us. It was like a test, because Quest was he had an idea in mind, but he wanted to find out who knew about it and what did it really mean, and is there something here that I can capture? And so we did a wonderful interview with him, and we were sharing with him how we did remember so vividly our performing in Harlem. With all that wonderful audience, full of energy, excitement, and excited to see all these different acts. And you know, that footage and those concerts took place over a period of weeks.
Weeks, yeah.
Right, it was like a whole summer, every weekend they would do
that.
Right, exactly. And you referred to it as the Black Woodstock earlier, but of course, it wasn't looked upon as that. It was, this was an idea of bringing music to Harlem and giving the people in Harlem a chance to enjoy some free music, free concerts. And we were loving it, because we didn't know how they were going to receive us, because much of our music had been played on pop stations rather than R&B stations.
That's
and so we were wondering, are they going to know who we are? Are they going to understand us? But what I
You said something really touching about this in the interview, and I have a clip. So Marilyn, I'm sorry to interrupt your story, but let me just show this, and then we'll talk about it. Okay, everybody, this is a clip from the documentary Summer of Soul.
You know, the Fifth Dimension, we travel all over the world, and our main purpose for traveling is just to bring and spread a little love. Ain't nothing wrong with that, is it?
were constantly being attacked because we weren't quote unquote black enough. Sometimes we were called the black group with the white sound. We didn't like that. We happen to be artists who are black, and our voices sound the way they sound. And how do you color? That used to be one of our questions. How do you color a sound? That was one of the reasons why performing in Harlem was so important to us.
Mm-hmm.
Because we wanted our people to know what we were about.
Mm-hmm.
And we were hoping that they would receive us.
You get so emotional telling that story about your people. Was mm-hmm. how did that resonate with you being on that stage and looking up, because you see a sea of people, and I should point out, not only black people, they were all people, but it was certainly right, primarily right. African American.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And well, in Harlem, of all places.
It was in Harlem, which is mainly a lot of black people. But then there were a lot of whites. Latinos. There were a lot of Puerto Ricans, and
mm-hmm.
you know, it was all nationalities there, you know. But for us to be performing for them like that, it gave us great joy, because we weren't used to performing to a minority audience like that.
Really,
where it was predominantly black, you know.
Right.
Because we were playing the pop circuit.
Yeah.
And so for us,
well, you had the number one song in the country as well.
Yeah, exactly right. Aquarius at the Sunshine. And thank God it was happening all over, because that gave us some credibility in the black area. So when we came up with it, it was acceptable.
But what I wanted to say about,
go ahead, Marilyn.
About what Questlove captured with that whole presentation of Summer of Soul, he captured the mixture of audience that makes up the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And we love that, you know, it just everybody coming together. There were no fights. There was no, everybody was there enjoying themselves and having a good time. And he just captured that whole mixture of people at that particular mm-hmm. time in 1969.
I also loved that they put it in historical context of what was happening in the country and specifically mm-hmm. in that neighborhood, and that they really were looking at it to sort of bring people together and stop the rioting.
Yes,
that's right. And one of the real joys of watching that footage was watching the kids in the audience dance with the parents, and just the whole feeling of it was just beautiful to see.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, one of the joys as an audience member, they sat you two down to look at the footage. And I had to take this still photo, because when it first went on, this is your faces.
Oh, my goodness.
And Marilyn, you make me cry just looking at this. And then, I mean, Billy's having a good time, but Marilyn, you're so emotional about it.
Well, you know, it's so it's amazing watching yourself 50 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but you've seen footage from back then. What was it about this that really resonated with you? Because you know, Billy has this joy of it, and you, it really seems like it triggers something in you.
Well, it just captured a moment in our lives that was very, very special, and I can't tell you why I got so emotional.
Well, Billy, was it your relatives that were also there that you saw afterwards?
Yes, and the way the Questlove made that segue mm-hmm. into the Edwin Hawkins singers. They were singing with the Edwin Hawkins singers, and I was just telling them, I'd say, well, yeah, I have some cousins that were with the Edwin Hawkins singers, and then all of a sudden you were it was just. I thought that was very
yeah, clever. It was so beautiful.
Very
done.
Clever.
Yeah. And, you know, so it's amazing to see that footage from 50 years ago, and mm-hmm. then to turn around and we've been in the studio working on some material, and all of a sudden Blackbird comes out,
mm-hmm.
which is something that we have been
at
working
the same on time.
Three
yeah,
or four
right,
years.
Right, right.
And we said, only God could do something like
that's
that.
That's right.
Only
that's
God
right.
could. Put all of those elements together and give us an opportunity to be out there enjoying singing and doing what we're doing right now and getting a chance to make statements about what's happening in our country, which you were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. and say, come on, everybody, let's get together and love one another and support one another and enjoy one another.
And know that we did it before.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to show one more clip because I want to show just a singing clip so people know they have to go out and see this documentary. There's one more clip from Summer of Soul. I wish people at home could see you backstage because Billy's there saying, look, look. And I'm like, I'm having more fun watching you look at yourself. Billy, go ahead.
Who has a chance to see themselves 50 years later?
No, I know. I know. Billy, you told a great story in the documentary about how the song, how you ended up with your biggest hit. I don't need you to necessarily get into the full details, but it was all by chance. How much can you tell a little bit about how you ended up with this medley of songs?
Yeah, well, actually, you know, we were working at the Americana Hotel in New York, and I went shopping, and on the way back, I dropped my wallet in the cab. I came upstairs and I told Marilyn, I said, baby, I don't have my wallet. I lost my wallet. And Marilyn said, oh, you can forget that. You know, you
ain't gonna never. That's a New York cab.
So I said, well, wait a minute. You know, about a half hour later, I got a call. And the guy says, hey, I got you. Is this Billy Davis? Jr.? I said, yes. He said, I got your wallet. I said, oh, wait, great, great, great. Where are you? I'm coming to you. I'm going to get it right now. So I went over to his house and I offered him some money, but he didn't take it. Mm-hmm. And I offered him to come and see the Fifth Dimension because we were working at the Royal Box at the Americana.
Oh, the Americana.
Yeah, during the prom season. So they came over and seen the show. And so after the show, they came backstage and they came upstairs and he said, you know, Billy, since you were so nice and invited me to see your show, he said, I'd like to invite you guys to see our show. I mean, that was by surprise. I mean, what show, you know?
Yeah, who is this guy, yeah, right?
What show do you have? And come to find out, he was one of the producers of Hair.
Oh, wow.
And we had been trying to get in to see Hair, but we couldn't get tickets. Nobody could get tickets because the lines were long. I mean, everybody, first of all, it was the first time anybody came on stage naked.
That's true.
And the lines were long. Everybody wanted to see
it. It helped sell tickets. Yep.
And we did too, you know. So but we got a chance to see Ronnie Dyson singing Aquarius. And that did it.
Did it immediately click like this is the song?
Yes. Immediately. Everybody in the Fifth Dimension knew that was our song.
That's right. We weren't even sitting together.
No.
And the song happened right before the intermission. And when we all went outside, went into the lobby, we dashed to each other and said, we've got to record that song. We've got to record that song. That'll be a hit for us.
Yeah.
We just really felt it would be. And we spoke to our producer, Bones Howe, and called him and said, we've got to record that song. And he wasn't as excited as we were at that mm-hmm. time. But then he came up with the idea of putting Aquarius together with Let the Sunshine In. And mm-hmm. that was magical.
And I would think a lot of groups were trying to get the rights to record that song. How was it that the Fifth Dimension got it?
Now, we can't tell you that. We didn't know all the inner workings behind,
right.
We're on the road performing
while all that other
stuff is going on.
And they do everything else. I just think that it's amazing, that whole story. But the other thing is you guys have always broken lots of new ground. You were the first African-American couple to host a network variety show. Which I didn't know. Yeah. I remember the show, but I didn't know you. Of course, you had to have been the first.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah. You know, again, it's another one of those things that just happened. We had a hit, You Don't Have to Be a Star to Be in My Show. And CBS was putting together television shows for the summer, for their summer series, and to see if they could come up with a new hit for the fall. And one of the ideas that they came up with was they decided to ask to see about us doing a summer replacement show. We did six shows, and it didn't end up becoming a series, but we ended
but
up
you
with
still did it
on there.
Yeah.
Jay Leno was one of the people on there, and of course,
oh,
Jay
wow.
went on to Glory.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun.
You know, what I loved is I was looking at footage online, and so much is on YouTube, and it's great because you can look up anything. You were everywhere, both of you together and separate. But what I didn't know, and this is a little bit of a fun fact for people who think they know everything about you, you have both been in Dreamgirls.
Now that is the interesting little tidbit you picked up.
I didn't know that. Now, I had known that Billy had played James Thunder early, but Marilyn, Marilyn, what did you play?
I played Effie.
Come on, Marilyn.
One performance. Can you imagine? That was my manager's idea. And I said, really? And he said, yes, everybody expects you to play, you know.
Dina, of course, Dina, right.
What a great idea for you to play Effie. Unfortunately, I ended up having a vocal problem as a result because of some air conditioning that was blowing in the dressing
room. Oh, it's always a killer.
And so my performances were numbered.
But you still did it. Were you, James, Billy, were you playing James in that production?
Oh yeah, I was faking my way to the top.
Of course you were.
We were in North Carolina doing that. I was so disappointed that I couldn't do the rest of the show, but I was really happy for Billy because he was so funny and he did a wonderful job.
And you've done other theater things. Marilyn, what theater have you done? I know you did Showboat, right?
I did Showboat. What an exciting experience that was.
With Hal Prince.
I know.
Right.
Come on.
Amazing. I mean, you really did your homework.
Yes, that's what I do.
And that's why you've been on for 100.
That's why everybody wants to watch you.
100 more.
That's right. Oh, my God. I'm exhausted thinking about it. So you did show, but what else have you done in the theater, Marilyn?
Let's see. Oh, my gosh.
My Name is
Alice. That was one of my first theatrical experiences was A, My Name is Alice. And I'm trying to remember the name of this show.
I know you recorded from Les Mis. Did you ever do Les Mis? You weren't ever in it.
No, not that particular.
But Billy, I know Billy had done Blues in the Night.
Yes, that's right. Yes, at the Old Globe Theater in San Diego.
Yeah, down San Diego.
Very interesting performance. I mean, just myself with three women.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with that, Billy.
Well, I was the man.
Well, I was having
I know.
Yeah.
Well, and one of those women wasn't Marilyn, I'm assuming.
No.
That's when we were working separately. I was back east and Billy was in San Diego.
Right. Yeah.
Is it hard when you're working separately? Because you've talked a lot about your marriage and how you've kept things going. Is it hard being separated, or does that make getting back together all the more fun?
Well, it's a two-person thing that. It's hard being separated, and it's a lot of fun. It's great getting back to be together.
Right.
When we're separated, we don't know how to. It's bad.
Really?
We've been working together most of our lives.
We enjoy working with each other constantly. You know. Yeah.
And you also wrote a book together, which was Up and Away. And right. you talk yeah. about your marriage and your careers and also your faith, which is really important to you. Right. And, you know, we don't really talk about it very much. But, you know, whatever your faith is, I think people all over the world need something to believe in, particularly right, right now.
Absolutely.
But you know the saying, if you don't believe in something, you'll fall for anything. You know,
that's so
yeah,
true.
Yeah. That but you know, so one of the things that while we shared our faith is because, you know, I recorded with the Lions singers who were a part of the Evan Hawkins singers a tune right. called "It Pays Each Day to Be on the Lord's Side," and all of these things that's happening to us, we know that the Lord is involved in it.
Yes.
You know, so that's why we had to give him all the glory and the praise, because it pays each day to be on his side.
Yes, it does. We're so excited about all the things that are happening in our careers right now, again, at this time in our lives, because, you know, you never know how long it's going to last,
right.
where it's going to go, if it's going to go. And we're really excited about this, our new film.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, yeah. indeed.
Well, no, I think that there's so much going on. As a matter of fact, I just want to say some yes. of the things.
Yes.
You've got a lot here. So you're going to be in the Hollywood Christmas Parade, one of my favorite events.
Yes, yes.
I know. We haven't done that in a long time.
We've done it before, but it was yeah. freezing.
It's very often freezing.
I don't understand that in California, but it gets right. cold. It gets cold.
Oh, no. Southern California is no joke in the winter. I want people
to going to show Walton's The Homecoming.
Yes,
I was just going to get that. That's November 28th, the Walton's right. Homecoming on the CW.
Yeah, right. Right.
I want people to know after our show today, you know, I have you first, but afterwards, you're going to be doing a whole thing about the behind the scenes of Summer of Soul it's 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 on the West Coast. And I have the link here. Hold on. Where is that damn link? Oh, there it is. Okay. You know, I got too many things going on for 100 shows. Right there. FCNY.org/events.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So people, and that's free. You can go watch them. You are performing at Catalina, one of my favorite venues in Southern California, December 3rd and 4th, Catalina Jazz Club.
On December 3rd and 4th, and we're going to be with, they're such lovely people. They're good friends of ours. And we wanted to come and celebrate Christmas with them.
Yeah.
Well,
That's your Christmas show. It's the, right. it's your Christmas show. And then, oh my God, then if that's not enough, you're going back to Vegas. You're back on the strip at the Orleans doing your Valentine's Day show.
On February 12th.
The Valentine's weekend.
Yes.
Right.
And this is we're really looking forward to this, because this is going to be the third time since the pandemic started that we have been supposedly going back to the Orleans. But I think this time it's going to happen.
It might happen. Yeah. Have you performed together live yet?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes, we have.
Since the pandemic? Okay, good.
Yes, we have. Right.
And we're glad,
glad
to be back on stage.
Yeah, I've been asking different performers about that. How do you feel in terms of performing under these circumstances? Are you comfortable with it?
Yes.
Well, right now we are. I mean, our first performance was like, oh boy, we haven't performed together in a year and a half. So now here we are, we're back in it, you know, and it came off well. So it doesn't take long. It's like riding a bicycle. You know, once you get up on it again, you start to get back.
You know, Billy, what's so special is that the audiences know how much they want to come and see a show, a live show, and how much they're looking forward to it, especially with all the time and what we've been going through for these past, it seems like 3 years to me now. Yeah. I guess
it does, doesn't it?
2 years. But you know what? For the performer, it's every bit as important and every bit as special, because we need the audiences just like they need to see us.
Right, right.
Yeah, I always tell people that, you know, they think to themselves, oh, singers can just sit home and sing, but there is a part missing, which is the reaction of an audience.
Right. Absolutely.
Right, right.
Absolutely.
We have some comments.
The same too.
That's true.
Yeah.
I want to point out we have a few comments before I let you go. Richard J. Alexander, director and producer, has said Marilyn McCoo is one of the greatest vocalists of all time.
Uh-huh. Oh, my. Thank you, Richard. How sweet of you.
Boy. Richard is and said the album is brilliant. I love it.
Oh, thank you. That's great. Thank you.
We were so happy to be doing those songs by Lennon and McCartney, because they're such fine songwriters and their music is different. And we loved being challenged to come up and do something different with their songs.
Yeah.
Did you have a favorite?
Oh,
I know it's hard to ask, but yeah, you know.
Well, of course, I really enjoyed doing Blackbird. You know what I really enjoyed doing?
Yeah.
What? Oh. Why am I blanking? It's the one you do, baby, that I like so much.
What? Help?
Yes, Help. I love him. Really do Help. He makes me cry when I hear that. I think I cry too much.
I love that. Are you kidding? And somebody else says Marilyn would know. Marilyn would know if this is possible. Somebody says, I still want Solid Gold to stream on Hulu or Netflix or on DVD. Marilyn, would Solid Gold ever come back? I know they tried once.
Well, who knows? There's always another way to approach something and make it new again. Who knows? We may just do that.
Yeah.
Somebody texted me. I can't show it, but somebody texted me. Don't forget that Marilyn was on, was it Days of Our Lives? It said on the soap opera. Yes. Was it Days?
Yes. I was on Days of Our Lives. And as a matter of fact, they brought me back on and they brought Billy on as well. And we don't play husband and wife. We're two totally different people.
Wow. Did you like doing that? Yeah, how do you two feel about acting? Do you like acting?
Yes, I do. It gives you a chance to experience some other part of your life, you know, to be something else. I mean, you can portray somebody else, you know.
And when I was younger, I was trying to decide if I wanted to sing or if I wanted to act, because I knew I wanted to do both. And what's wonderful about the careers that we've had is that I've had a chance
to
do both.
You've done it all.
And I'm very thankful for that.
Do you have goals still? Is there something that you're like, this is what I want to do? This is my next project.
Well, we have a couple of projects in the works right now that we're talking about that we can't go any further about.
Okay. But you will tell me when the time is right.
We will let you know when the time is right, Billy.
And my producer just texted me, this is the photo I took the night that we were with Jennifer Lewis. I didn't take a photo with you, but this was the photo of you two and Jennifer.
Oh my God.
Yes, yes.
They are, Billy and Jennifer are so funny together because they're both from St. Louis. And every time she sees Billy, she says, hey, Kenlock.
Yeah, right. That's the county of St. Louis, right?
Oh, I am well familiar with Kinlock.
There's some stories that go along with that, but I can't share them because I wasn't here.
Yeah.
You two are a delight. I wish you so much luck with everything. I'm hoping I get to see you in Catalina or in Vegas. I will let you know.
Billy, we would really hope that you can come and see us at the Catalina.
We'll do this in person next time.
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Marilyn McCoo, Billy Davis Jr., thank you so much for celebrating my 100th birthday. I wish that you both live to 100 and keep celebrating your love and entertaining generations.
Well, thank you. God bless you, Billy. And you just keep doing the marvelous job that you're doing. That's why you're on so long, because your energy is great and you sparkle.
And your wish is cool, because we're close to 100 now.
That's all. Oh, be quiet. You're fine. Guys, thank you so much. We'll see you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, my God. I love them. Oh, my God. I want to move in with Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr. That's what I want to do. I could have them on every day, and I would never run out of questions. Everybody, thank you for watching Billy Masters Live. We are still live every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Oh, they're still backstage. If you stay, I'll talk to you right after I sign off. Everybody, thank you for watching. We will see you next week. And until next week, just remember, if we're here, we're live. And where is my outro? Oh, my God, my outro music is missing. Well, we'll just play. Oh, there it is. Bye, guys.